News Radio 1290, WJNO. News Radio 1290, WJNO.
From the Club Raymond Motor Cars Studio, you're listening to News Radio 1290, WJNO, an iHeartRadio station.
The thoughts and opinions expressed are those of the sponsors and don't necessarily reflect those of this station or iHeartMedia.
This is the Family Center for Recovery show. Join us now to learn ways to begin the path to recovery. The Family Center for Recovery treats patients that most centers don't. Learn more at FCFRMD.com. That's FCFRMD.com.
So here we are, Sunday afternoon, and you've just tuned in to the Family Center for Recovery show. I am your host, Peter Nathan, and with me today in the studio, very special guest, Vice Mayor Melissa McKinley. Vice Mayor, thank you so much for joining us in the studio. And welcome.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here today.
Today, let's see. What? Could you maybe tell us a little bit? I know a lot, just about everybody's listening. They know who you are, but could you maybe kind of give us a little bit about your, tell us a little bit about yourself and background and things like that for our listeners?
Sure. Well, you know, first and foremost, I am a Palm Beach County Commissioner. I represent District 6, which is the geographically the largest district in Palm Beach County. I go basically from the Turnpike all the way west out through the Glades community, so a myriad of issues. My most important job is I'm a mom. I have three children. They're 19, 17, and 16. They keep me busy. I've been doing advocacy work now for about 25 years, most of that on the volunteer nonprofit side, but have worked in congressional offices and U.S. Senate offices and legislative offices and county government. And so just good experience behind the scenes. And, you know, not born and raised in Florida, but raised here since I was 6 years old. And I managed to pick up a Southern accent along the way, even though I was born in New York. But, you know, just trying to do good work each day.
Excellent. And youth. As far as our youth and the future and your active involvement is so important, and there are some things that are facing our youth today. And we were last night at the Fed Up rally, a lot of our younger population and things along those lines. What are as far as opioid crisis, which is facing our youth, your thoughts on that and the Fed Up rally last night?
Well, you know, this crisis facing our youth, it scares the daylights out of me, you know, considering I've got three teenagers that are sort of walking right into this crisis in their generation. I think it'll be the biggest public health crisis that they face. You know, for me, when I was a kid, I remember when Magic Johnson came out that he had HIV, and that was sort of the public health crisis of my generation. You know, knowing I have a kid in college right now, you know, hearing Attorney General Pam Bondi warn college students not to take pills. You know, people are buying pill presses online and they're pressing pills that say they're Adderall, but they're actually heroin. Having to have those conversations with my children is the best word to use. It's very sobering. My son rode along with Palm Beach County Fire Rescue for 3.5 years as a cadet. Hearing him tell his peers stories about overdose calls that they went on and what it looked like when they found the patient and what the patient looked like after being given Narcan. Just having to hear my own kids talk about this crisis, it's their new normal. It's their reality. And it's an issue that we need to address in our youth, trying to do prevention programs. You know, I hate to go back. It's not the Just Say No campaign, that, you know, Nancy Reagan had back when I was a kid. We need to be realistic with our kids. We need to tell them what these drugs look like. We need to tell them what they could do, and show them the realities of it. And it's just frightening.
That's a word that I was thinking at the same as well, is frightening. And the fact is awareness is really where it begins. It's as far as what we can do and the programs that are out there and how we can best let people know. The Fed Up rally, your thoughts last night, there must have been probably well over 1,000 people in attendance, and to see the candlelight vigil. Yes, your thoughts as far as the Fed Up rally. I know you were our keynote speaker last night, and so yes, your thoughts.
You know, I got to give it to Maureen Killian and Alyssa Franklin and their team for putting that together last night. It was a beautiful event. It's sad that we have to come together and do awareness events and marches on this crisis when it's a preventable with the appropriate funding, which we haven't been able to get. But I was so impressed with the caliber of the speakers that we had. Yeah, I was the keynote, but so many of my colleagues were up there joining me, and they were so impressive and so passionate about the work they do. But I think what really set the tone for me was the very beginning, and I asked members of the audience who were in active recovery to stand up. And when I saw 90% of that audience stand up as members of, you know, they have fought a long, hard battle to get to where they're at, and they still have to fight this battle for the rest of their lives. But, you know, those are the true heroes in this epidemic. And those were the heroes that we were honoring last night, or those that have made it through.
Well put. The thing that I draw off of is what you just mentioned earlier was Magic Johnson and HIV, AIDS, and that movement. And a lot of parallels as far as it was really kind of back in the shadows until people really kind of came out and started to show up and say, you know what, this is something, and we need to do something about this. And that's one of the things I really like as far as the movement that we have here. And I know that this was a national Fed Up rally, and that there were communities throughout the United States, but to see so many people show out and voice their support, and you've really kind of been at the forefront. You've been as far as the leader that we all kind of look to as far as being to do those types of things. I know there's a program that other communities, and I know that other countries around the world, I think the Netherlands has, Needle Exchange. Could you maybe go over a little bit about where we're at on that? And I think how we developed that and how we got there as far as that program.
Yeah, well, we need to be realistic. You know, we didn't get to the successes on the HIV AIDS epidemic by selling an abstinence-only program. We didn't go out there and tell people to quit having sex. We went out there and told people to protect themselves, to be careful. These are the realities if this is the behavior you're engaging in. And we armed them with the proper tools that they needed to protect themselves. You know, we had scientists that went out and were well-funded to do research to come up with medication to try to eradicate the virus. And we have come leaps and bounds. And that same sort of approach has to be taken with this epidemic. We need to be realistic about it. We need to arm people with the tools that they need to make safe decisions. And, you know, when they need help, we need to be able to have the resources there to help them. HIV is a disease. Addiction is a disease. You know, the Needle Exchange Program, that came about last year. State Representative Katie Edwards out of Broward County, she introduced the legislation, was able to get a pilot project funded through the University of Miami down to Miami-Dade County. I spoke with Representative Edwards yesterday. She's going to be filing legislation this year that would tweak that and hopefully make that program more widely available across Florida. And she has told me that if we have a University of Miami satellite program here in Palm Beach County, that we might be able to go ahead and implement the program since it's through the same university that's doing the program down in Miami. So we're researching that right now, and I hope that we can get something like that up and running here.
Excellent. A common sense approach to what we're currently facing. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Family Center for Recovery Show. I'm your host, Peter Nathan. With me today, very special guest has joined me in the studio today, Vice Mayor Melissa McKinley. And we're talking about Needle Exchange. We're talking about common sense approach. And the thing that I was listening to you last night to the other speakers is that we're looking at this as medical related, aren't we? This is something that is a disease, isn't it? Your thoughts on that as we talk about the addiction and as a disease.
Well, absolutely, addiction is a disease. It's recognized by every scientific organization as a disease. You know, we're talking about needle exchange programs because of the diseases that drug use presents, trying to do some harm reduction to lower HIV/AIDS rates and hepatitis rates that we're seeing on the rise because of dirty needles. But addiction is a disease and people need to recognize that. You don't wake up one day and decide, you know what, today I think it's a good day to shoot up some heroin and become a heroin addict. That's not how it works. You don't wake up one morning and say, I really feel like I'd like some rum in my orange juice this morning. You don't wake up to becoming an alcoholic. You grow into it. It's a chronic illness. We don't tell somebody with diabetes, there's two ways to deal with diabetes. You can deal with it through diet and exercise, or sometimes you need to deal with it through medication. Addiction's the same way. Some people might be able to deal with it through abstinence, and some people might need some assistance to be able to get through that. But we need to stop assuming it's a moral failing and start recognizing that it is a disease that is recognized by the medical community.
One of the things that I gathered when I was at the Palm Beach State College roundtable that you hosted, there was but I know that he's potentially a future governor of our state. And the thing that I got was that legislators and people, even people in the general population, educating them and letting them know that really a big component, and we've talked about this on the show, is mental health plays a major factor in it, along with addiction. That there's usually some sort of coexisting disorder. So it was
it's Senator Latvala, Jack Latvala out of Pinellas County, who's a very dear friend. He sits in one of the most powerful positions in Florida as chairman of the Senate Appropriations Committee. Senator Kevin Rader, who's here from Palm Beach County, has been our local leader in the legislature on this issue. And Senator Rader and I reached out to Senator Latvala and said, hey, why don't you come down? We want to share with you some funding ideas that we think you should support in the upcoming session. He was more than willing to accept that. We pulled together what I thought was every component on this issue. We couldn't get the insurance industry there, but we got everybody else there, hospitals, doctors, treatment providers, policymakers, judicial, law enforcement, and of course, those in recovery and those affected by addiction personally and their families. And it was a great conversation and one that needs to happen more often. And you're right. Some legislators get it. And, I brought this topic up almost 2 years ago at a Florida Association of Counties conference. And I had colleagues from other parts of the state saying, what is this issue? We don't have this in our hometown. And, fast forward a year and everyone's like, wow, where did this come from? And everyone's talking about it now. We need to keep doing that.
That was the thing I liked about Jack Latvala, was that he was open. I mean, he was like, tell me more. I want to learn about this. What can we do? And I think the thing that the overall underlying theme is people are saying, look, we can't arrest our way out of this one. I mean, we really need to take a closer look at really what's going on and what's involved here. And the fact of your insight as far as that addiction as a disease, as far as like being able to talk with other people, colleagues, things along those lines, how are they doing as far as that?
Well, I took a parenting class after my third child was born that said you have to tell a child something 2,000 times before they actually understand it. And, sort of look both ways before you cross the street. So we have to be telling our legislators this. It's going to take a couple thousand times to tell them. I've got to say, Senator Latvala, we're opposite sides of the political spectrum, but I work well with him, and when he commits to something, he is committed 110%. This past week, he sent a letter to the governor asking the governor to extend the emergency crisis, which I'd been the only one to do that so far. And I'm happy to have him on board. But with that request to extend the crisis, he asked for an additional $20 million in funding.
And we'll pick up on that when we come back after this short commercial message. We'll be right back, and thank you for joining us.
You're You're listening to the Family Center for Recovery show. Find out more about the Family Center for Recovery on Facebook.com/Family Center for Recovery. The Family Center for Recovery treats patients that most centers don't. We'll be right back.
At the Family Center for Recovery in Lantana, they treat little problems before they become big problems. Unfortunately, 98% of treatment centers won't treat teens because they think it's too difficult or not profitable enough. Whether your teen is struggling with behavior issues, substance abuse, or mental illness, they believe every kid deserves a chance. Contact Family Center for Recovery or go to FCFRMD.com. That's FCFRMD.com. Family Center for Recovery. Before little problems become big problems.
As a teacher, having a foster grandparent in my room, it enables me to have an extra set of hands.
Foster grandparents are role models, tutors, and friends to children with exceptional needs.
It's been fantastic having Grandma Freddie in our room.
It is the best feeling in the world.
I'm a best student because of her.
To learn more about how to become a foster grandparent and help children in need, call 1-800-942-2677 or visit SeniorCorps@NationalService.gov.
Are you looking for a new career path? Want to make a difference in your community? Become a teacher. The American Board can help you earn a teaching certificate and a Florida teaching license in a year or less. American Board's online program allows you to set your own schedule for a price that fits your budget. Visit www.americanboard.org. That's americanboard.org for more information on how you can become a Florida teacher.
Welcome back to the Family Center for Recovery radio show. If you wish to share this broadcast with a friend, you'll find the link at the Family Center for Recovery's website, FCFRMD.com. That's FCFRMD.com.
Here we are. We are back. And thank you for making us a part of your Sunday afternoon, wherever that may be. If you're at a picnic, out for a Sunday drive, we're just doing some chores around the house, dishes, things along those lines. We appreciate you being a part of our Sunday afternoon and listening to us. It's Family Center for Recovery show, and I'm your host, Peter Nathan. With me today, very special guest, Vice Mayor Melissa McKinley. We're talking before break as far as about funding. There's $20 million. That's a big figure. And could you maybe kind of go over for our listeners a little bit about something like that.
So. Yeah, absolutely. You know, when the governor issued his public health crisis declaration in early May, there was a clause in there that talked about being able to use his emergency powers to appropriate money to address this crisis. Haven't seen that happen yet. The legislature did close out, and they put some additional money in different pockets, but the governor can tap into his budget stabilization fund and pull those dollars out immediately. And what we found out after session was we didn't receive a $20 million grant that we had been receiving from the federal government, and that hole was never plugged. What that means to Palm Beach County and just one organization, Drug Abuse Foundation, is the potential loss of 16 staff members and 40 treatment beds. At a time where we just lost the beds at Gratitude House and some other things are happening. So this is a $20 million request, not tied to next year's budget process, but tied to the current year that Senator Latvala has proposed, that would provide treatment beds, outpatient therapy services, and education funding. And so, you know, we all need to get on board and push the governor to support that request.
That's the thing that as I attend a lot of these coalition meetings and I talk with other advocates and things along those lines is that we need more beds. And with Gratitude House just closing recently and what you just mentioned. So how can we as advocates, as people that want to voice our opinion, and that's really what we need. I mean, we've got the DAF and what people are out there. So what can we do, would you suggest?
Keep pushing your elected officials to put money in the right place. You know, in terms of Gratitude House, I just read a report in the Palm Beach Post that Christine Stapleton wrote about Gratitude House, and they've just sold their real estate holdings for about $2 million. And, you know, if anybody knows anyone on the board at Gratitude House, encourage them to reinvest that money to build a better Gratitude House so we can reopen those beds. Here, Palm Beach County, the commission voted to approve $3 million over the next year and a half. We're hoping to open up an addiction receiving facility with some of that money. That would be housed at the old stockade out by the fairgrounds inside the infirmary that we have there. That would provide a number of possible detox beds and temporary residential treatment beds, you know, in a triage center to try to help people that are coming in find, you know, connect with resources out in the community.
Yeah, I know that that's something that people are very much looking forward to as far as being open. And yes, Gratitude House, when I haven't had a chance to read the article yet. I kind of breezed over it this morning before taping our show here. But I did notice that, yes, they've been since 1960.
Yeah.
So, and it provided treatment for so many people.
Yeah, it's sad the county commission had just approved, you know, some funding for Gratitude House to help, you know, defray the cost of services there. And, you know, now that they've closed, obviously we're not going to be able to give them that funding. But it's sad when internal politics gets in the way of providing a much needed resource. And I really hope that they'll be able to reinvest that in another building and refurbish it and bring those residents that so desperately need those services, those moms and those babies. So.
Yep. And I know that there were a lot of people that made things, that made it what it was. And out of that, hopefully those people will be able to find a new way and a different way to reopen. Because I know that was so influential in so many women's lives in treatment. And we're looking at pharmaceutical companies. And I know that there's some, and I've seen as far as some firms that are looking to do something and go after and basically say enough's enough here and we're going to file suit against you and you're going to have to ante up here. So, yeah, what could you maybe tell for our listeners as far as what you've seen, what you've read, and what's going on with that type of stuff?
You know, so I'm very engaged in, you know, in my local government associations, the national one being the National Association of Counties, which we nickname NACO. NACO sends out monthly newsletters, and every month there seems to be some other jurisdiction across this country that's filing lawsuit against the pharmaceutical industries to help offset the response costs that local governments have had. So I was reading those and I thought, why can't Palm Beach County do that? You know, we're dealing with it in a much bigger way than other communities are. And so we have our county attorney right now investigating the possibility of filing suit. I'm hoping that Ms. Neiman will report back to us in our September meeting. We can make a decision about moving forward. I'm very impressed with Mayor Glickstein down in Delray Beach. They've already made that decision. They have hired their law firm, and they're getting ready to file suit. And I do think that the pharmaceutical industry needs to bear some responsibility. You know, our state attorney made a pretty good case last night at the Fed Up rally, the other night at the Fed Up rally about you know, OxyContin and its entry into the marketplace in 1996 and what we've seen since then. And, you know, it's time for them to help.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at the parallels as far as, you know, other types of suits of this magnitude, class action suits, things of that nature. So holding pharmaceutical companies accountable. And I know that there's some excellent programs out there as far as the drop boxes and things along those lines. Could you maybe for our listeners go over as far as some things as far as pharmaceuticals, big pharmas, things like that, and holding them more accountable and kind of what you're seeing as far as in the halls of legislators and what the kind of overall theme is and what they're kind of talking about in that area? What your thoughts on something like that?
Yeah, well, you know, it's hard to really talk about where the pharmaceutical industry is coming from. They haven't been very participatory in a lot of the events that we've done, so I'm not entirely sure what they're thinking. I do think that we have an opportunity to partner with them on the prescription drug monitoring program, if the legislature can loosen up strings and let them help us fund that. But you know, it's just an uphill battle when you're dealing with such a powerful lobby like the pharmaceutical industry, you know, and they need to educate, you know, they send their sales reps into these doctors' offices And they're the ones that are educating the doctors on this medication. I think there needs to be a more thorough, comprehensive physician education program on these pharmaceuticals, these opioids. I don't think we should be relying on industry to educate the folks that are doling those pills out. We need some of the medical community, maybe some of like the Center for Disease Control or the National Institute of Health, some sort of unbiased participant to come in and do some of that education of our doctors.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Family Center for Recovery Show, and I'm your host, Peter Nathan. With me today, very special guest, Vice Mayor Melissa McKinley. And we're talking about pharmaceutical companies. We're talking about as far as a really kind of awareness, prevention, education, things along those lines. I know that locally here, the Palm Beach County Substance Awareness Coalition, that they're actively involved. And that's the type of thing that to see students' involvement in programs and getting out there and educating. Yes, that's what we're looking for, and taking our responsibility. And your thoughts as far as doctors. I know that you know, there's certain things that they're doing, that they're becoming more aware of it, but what are some other things that maybe we could do as far as with doctors and helping in that respect?
You know, doctors are they're a funny breed. You know, they don't like anything that includes the word additional education or mandated requirements. You know, that's an automatic red flag to them, and you know, they kind of bow up and want to fight those issues. I get the sense that at least with the Florida Medical Association, I'm more familiar with them than the AMA. I get the sense that they're more willing to engage in the conversation now than they ever have been. You know, there is a need for prescription pain medications in medicine. Mm-hmm. I think that it's been abused, obviously, and we need to scale back and make sure that the pain medications are reserved for those in the most critical need of pain medications. You know, your end stage cancer patients and, you know, some of those situations. But our doctors need to engage more in the conversation. We've sort of been letting the pain management doctors lead this. What they need to hear from is how it's affecting other areas of medication, our medicine. You know, I've talked to OBGYNs, and they talk about the pregnant women or their pregnant patients that are addicted to opioids and how they're having to deal with that in a pregnancy situation. So I think there needs to be a ground swelling of other medical providers educating their peers in the pain management industry about, you know, how their decisions, you know, those who are prescribing prescription medications are affecting other doctors and their patients, particularly in the, you know, OBGYN field.
Pain management, and there's with an aging population, and look, people have aches and pains, mm-hmm. and you know, going through a pregnancy and things along those lines. We just, it seems to me, and I think that our listeners would also kind of, we've got to figure out a better way, you know, research and things along those lines, other types of answers as far as to handle and to deal with pains. What are some of your thoughts on things like research and things in areas that maybe we could direct some funding towards?
You know, I can remember having the dermatologist taking a little something off my back and being offered prescription pain medication for that. I think maybe we ought to just work with trying Tylenol first or Advil first or ibuprofen and building up from there. If the need is greater, then there's something greater out there to help them. But we don't need to start with the hardest, heaviest pain medication first. I'm rambling a little bit here. You asked, what was the second part of your question?
Well, I mean, as far as what, pain management and research, maybe like with, like scripts and things along those lines and, funding and helping to really kind of find the different types of things that they might be able to research and see from a scientific standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for reminding me. I'm still waiting for my coffee to kick in. Senator Nelson, Bill Nelson, who is my former boss, and I have a great amount of respect for him, but he held one of the most interesting meetings that I've been through on this, and that was with Scripps and Max Planck. And
wow.
The researchers there are already researching addiction, and they're coming a long way. But their main thing, and I mentioned this the other night at the Fed Up rally, We are releasing patients from inpatient treatment at the height of their craving.
And with that, we'll be right back after this commercial message. Thank you for joining us, but we'll be right back.
The Family Center for Recovery is the only facility in Florida owned and operated by an addiction psychiatrist, Dr. Robert Moran, and he's dedicated his life to helping the people no one else will. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
The Family Center for Recovery in Lantana is the only treatment center in Florida owned and operated by a triple board certified psychiatrist. This means the Family Center for Recovery does treatment the right way. They treat substance abuse, depression, bipolar disorder, OCD, anxiety, teens and adults at all levels of inpatient care. Check out the innovative, life-changing treatment the Family Center for Recovery in Lantana has to offer at FCFRMD.com. That's FCFRMD.com.
Premature birth is the number one killer of babies. Those who survive often face birth defects and complications that affect them for life. For hundreds of thousands of families in the United States, this is the hardest thing they will ever have to face. And it's even harder on the baby. March of Dimes is providing education and support to families and funding life-saving research to give every baby a fighting chance. You can help. Do something today. Give them tomorrow at marchofdimes.org/tomorrow.
Water. You rely on it daily, but what do you really know about it? There is so much more to H2O than you realize. Did you know that tap water provides us with a low-cost way to stay hydrated, public health and fire protection, and nearly every product that we use every day? The more you know about your H2O, the more there is to love. To learn more, visit drinktap.org. This message is brought to you by the American Water Works Association and your local water provider.
This is the Family Center for Recovery show. The Family Center for Recovery treats patients that other centers don't, including teens, expectant mothers, patients with mental health issues, or needing a medical detox. Call 855-202-4220.
Here we are. We are back. And thank you for making us a part of your Sunday afternoon. You've tuned in to the Family Center for Recovery show. I'm your host, Peter Nathan. And with me today in the studio, a very special guest, Vice Mayor Melissa McKinley. We hope that the sun is shining in your world today. And we left and we were talking about Senator Bill Nelson. We're talking science. Yes.
Yeah, Melissa. That's Senator's favorite subject. I was mentioning that we met with researchers from Scripps, Max Planck, and Florida Atlantic University. And what they were telling us is that an opioid heroin addict's peak craving hits at about 30 to 90 days post-withdrawal. And so what that means is that most of our inpatient treatment programs are set to be 28 to 30 days, and that's what insurance typically covers. So we're sending people back on the street at their peak craving, and they're going and they're taking the doses of heroin that they took before they went into treatment, which is substantially more potent because they haven't been using, and we're seeing them die. So, you know, Senator Nelson is looking at some reforms, but the insurance companies need to look at the coverage they're providing and maybe retool it. And when you're dealing with an opioid or heroin addict, recreating those programs and making them a 90-day program so that we're trying to ensure people's success more than their failure.
And I know Dr. Moran is listening, and this is something we talk about quite often, is continuum of care and length of treatment, and really, yes. So to hear somebody such as a scientist also on the same page and also legislator, it sounds like people are starting to come together and there's some commonality in that area, which is enlightening and freshening. The child welfare and things along those lines. We were talking before during break. Your thoughts and yes, what we can do in that area. What is going on in that area?
Yeah, well, that's probably the least talked about area in this crisis is the children that are left behind when a parent dies of an overdose, or you know, when they have to go into inpatient treatment, or when they just can't. They can't fight the cravings and they succumb to drug use. you know, these kids, these toddlers, or you know, we've all seen the newspaper pictures and, you know, the YouTubes of the parents being passed out in the front seat and a little one being strapped in the car seat in the back, and it's heartbreaking, and that's happening all over our country. And in here locally, I've heard the stories from fire rescue employees. And, you know, we're seeing an increase in the Florida Department of Children and Families, the number of kids that are being pulled from their homes. We have a shortage of child care workers. We have a shortage of guardian ad litems, which are supposed to protect the interests of the child in court. It's heartbreaking. And, you know, we talk about wanting to fund residential treatment beds, and we talk about wanting to fund detox beds and, you know, needle exchange programs and doing all that. But at the same time, we also need to be talking about how to help this next generation. Many of them will be growing up without their parents. And what can we do to help them? You know, we know that childhood trauma is a pre-indicator for drug use later on in life. How can we prevent that cycle? And we need to put some resources to helping those kids.
You know, the thing I was talking with Gunnell the other night at the Fed Up rally before we went out and we did the walk, and one of the things she did talk about, and this was something that charter schools, as far as creating a different environment, as far as for children and learning, and there's so many things as far as in our various schools, but a charter school that's specifically for somebody that's a family that's, you know, survived, think that type of thing. Your thoughts? I know we kind of talked a little bit during break as far as some of the things that are out there. Could you maybe for our listeners talk a little bit about something like that and how it works and things like that?
Well, Peter, I think we're talking about two unique populations here. The first one we're talking about, the children who are left behind that need help. We need to be wrapping services around them and around their families. Probably the best example I have ever seen of wraparound services in our community is provided by Boys Town of South Florida, where they go into the home and every aspect that family needs help with, they connect them to the right resources. And we need to be doing that for these children. The other population you're talking about is those children and young adults that are fighting addiction themselves. And we have many more than we're probably willing to admit. And I have met with some representatives regarding sober high schools. I'm not a huge supporter of charter schools. I think I've been pretty public about that. But when they fulfill a particular niche, which this would, I think it's worth looking at. That's sort of a safe environment for children, for young adults that are battling addiction themselves, to be with their peers. And we know that peer support, you know, it leads them to better successes. And I think some folks are exploring the possibility of having one of those in Palm Beach County, and I would fully support that.
Excellent. First responders, they are tired hours that they and seeing first. And yes, could you maybe go over for our listeners a little bit about first responders and their going? Yes.
You know, I'm going to talk about first responders in the sense of our firefighter paramedics. And I have done ride-alongs with Palm Beach County Fire Rescue, and I'll continue to do ride-alongs. Just being able to talk to the men and women that are on the street, you know, seeing this day in and day out. They're a brave bunch, not ones to usually admit that something bothers them. But if you talk to them behind the scenes, kind of quietly, it's wearing them thin. You know, they're going on call after call after call, and they're seeing this. They're seeing the kids left behind. You know, they're reviving the same person sometimes two, three times in the same day. It's tough on them. You know, I want to make sure that they have the resources that they need to be able to respond to this epidemic, both in terms of supplies on the truck and, you know, proper staffing, but also to make sure that when they come off duty, if they need counseling services or, you know, their family members do, if they're a little post-traumatic, you know, making sure that we have the counseling services available for fire rescue. But this is costing millions. It cost us $6 million in Palm Beach County last year to roll the trucks out on overdose calls. Plus, the cost of Narcan is more than, what, quadrupled? So.
Well, and the thing, having been at the Palm Beach State College Roundtable that you hosted and having all those officials there and listening, first responder, and there was 11-month-old that was, it's just heartbreaking, and to see where we're at and what this has come to. But, you know, the thing that I see is there's hope out there. And one of the areas that I really see a lot of hope in, Judge Shepherd, drug court. I've sat in on drug court, and the stories and the things that I hear and that I see and how she conducts her courtroom. We were talking. Your thoughts on drug court, Judge Shepherd?
Yeah, Judge Shepherd, boy, I saw her in action yesterday. I went and observed her courtroom and spoke at the drug court graduation, and she is a warrior, and she's one of my new heroes in the battle in this epidemic. I'm so impressed with her compassion. She takes a real personal interest in all of the people that come before her. She gives them a lot of chances to make things right and is very flexible. And, you know, she's tough. She's tough as nails, but she knows what she's dealing with, and she understands this population. She's got a lot of compassion for it. But it costs $100, and I think she was telling me about $125 a day to keep somebody behind bars in our county jail, versus just over $6 a day to keep them in drug court. I mean, you do the math. If you're a taxpayer in Palm Beach County, which one do you want to fund? It has a 97% success rate, our Palm Beach County drug court. I'm proud that the county commission can help support that, but I'd love to see that program expanded, and but she's doing a phenomenal job.
Yeah, she certainly is, and her staff, and the stories and the smiling faces. I think that's the thing I take most out of it, is seeing the ones that graduated and their lives and how thankful they are for having a new life. Thoughts as far as our insurance companies. What can we do there? I mean, what are some areas as far as if maybe somebody sitting out there knows somebody in the insurance industry or is looking for, what is there anything we can do there, or what are your thoughts on the insurance companies?
Well, you know, we have a new chief financial officer in the state of Florida, Jimmy Petronas out of Panama City, and I'd love to see the CFO's office publicly engage in this conversation a little bit more because they, you know, they're what is it? The insurance commissioner for the state of Florida is housed within that office. And I think they need to be at the table and part of this conversation. You know, we're talking about two things. We're talking about revising coverage. You know, we talked about 28 to 30 days seems to be the norm, and maybe we ought to look at expanding that depending on the substance that's being abused. But we also have a huge issue of fraud. You know, we're seeing that in the sober homes, and I think you should probably invite the state attorney and Al Johnson on to do a whole show on sober homes. We won't go down that path today. But the fraud and the millions and millions, probably billions of dollars that are wasted on these unnecessary drug tests that are being submitted by these unscrupulous providers. You know, where's the insurance industry? Why are they not screaming about this? We could use the money that we save from that to expand and provide proper length treatment to people who are suffering from addiction. Just seems kind of backwards to me.
Same pretty common sense to me.
Yeah.
I mean, and somewhere along the lines, when you start looking at the bills and what the cost is for some of these testings, and I think I had a guest once say as far as that, testing for genetics? I don't think my genetics have changed since the last time. It's over. It's like, so it seems like, yes, there's something we could certainly do in that area. Our elderly population, often it's an area that people really don't think about. I always say grandma, grandpa, things. What are your thoughts as far as our elderly population and where they fit in on this?
You know, I have traditionally really looked at this issue probably in a mistake by me in a bubble, and really looked at it among our young adult population. But I think it was City Commissioner Shannon Materio and I held a town hall with families affected by opioids back in February. And there was a gentleman there that told a story of his father living in one of the more well-known retirement communities in Palm Beach County. And it took 3 to 4 days for somebody to find his dad who had overdosed. And, you know, you're talking about a population that's on a lot of different medication. I think it's so easy to accidentally overdose on, you know, your prescription medications, to confuse them. you know, I don't think that they're probably not as tolerant to high doses of opioids as some others might be. But, yeah, it's a population that we need to include in this conversation.
Yes, we certainly do. It's a very proud population. And a lot of times isolation. So
Right. We're
going to be right back after this short commercial message. Thanks for joining us, and we'll be right back.
Like the Family Center for Recovery on Facebook to learn more about their mental health service and Addiction Resources Center. Located in Lantana, Florida, the Family Center for Recovery treats patients that most centers can't. Call anytime, 855-202-4220. We'll be right back.
At the Family Center for Recovery in Lantana, they treat little problems before they become big problems. Unfortunately, 98% of treatment centers won't treat teens because they think it's too difficult or not profitable enough. Whether your teen is struggling with behavior issues, substance abuse, or mental illness, they believe every kid deserves a chance. Contact Family Center for Recovery or go to FCFRMD.com. That's FCFRMD.com. Family Center for Recovery. Before little problems become big problems.
Are you looking for a new career path? Want to make a difference in your community? Become a teacher. The American Board can help you earn a teaching certificate and a Florida teaching license in a year or less. American Board's online program allows you to set your own schedule for a price that fits your budget. Visit www.americanboard.org. That's americanboard.org for more information on how you can become a Florida teacher.
As a teacher, having a foster grandparent in my room, it enables me to have an extra set of hands.
Foster grandparents are role models, tutors, and friends to children with exceptional needs.
It's been fantastic having Grandma Freddie in our room.
It is the best feeling in the world.
I'm the best student because of her.
To learn more about how to become a foster grandparent and help children in need, call 1-800-942-2677 or visit SeniorCorps at nationalservice.gov.
This is the Family Center for Recovery show. The Family Center for Recovery treats patients that other centers don't, including teens, expectant mothers, patients with mental health issues, or needing a medical detox. Call 855-202-4220.
We are back, and thank you for joining us. You tuned in to the Family Center for Recovery show. Your host, Peter Nathan, and you've been listening to our very special guest today, Vice Mayor Miss Lissa McKinley. And so you're probably sitting out there and you're thinking, what can I do? Okay, well, we were talking over break. Yes, please, for our listeners, what are some ways that people could actually get involved and help and do?
I think there's a bunch of different ways. You know, let's start with parents. Talk to your kids. You know, talk to your kids about the reality of drug use. Just say no doesn't work anymore. It's a good start, but we need to be more realistic than that. Clean out your medicine cabinets. You know, I'll tell you that when they had the drug take back day earlier this spring, I went through some boxes I'd never unpacked when I moved, and I found enough pills for a 30-day supply, and I thank God every day my kids didn't find it. Kids, talk to your peers. You know, and reach out if you have an issue. Talk to somebody. Talk to your best friend. You know, if you're not comfortable talking to your mom and dad, go to a guidance counselor. Talk to your teacher, a coach. Reach out for help. It's okay to ask for help. You know, there's a lot of anyone in the community can attend these Sober Home Task Force meetings, the Heroin Task Force meetings, the Substance Abuse Coalition. You know, volunteer in a nonprofit. Learn about the industry, recognize that it's a disease, and speak up and speak out and speak often. In terms of legislation, call your policymakers. In particular, please call Senator Latvala, Jack Latvala, and thank him for his $20 million proposal that he put out this week. But more importantly than that, call Governor Rick Scott today, tomorrow, as often as you have to, and tell him to get on board with Senator Latvala's request. We need to put the pressure on. You know, keep putting your pressure on me. I've got six fabulous colleagues of mine on the county commission that all got on board behind this request. It's a good start. We can keep doing more. But don't be afraid to show up at meetings and tell us how you feel. Don't be afraid to email us and call us and text us and whatever. Just stand up and speak up.
I know in this day and age, in this world we live in, social media, Facebook, emails, and you know what? Our listeners out there, they got that pen and paper. They know at the beginning of the show that they should already have it there. So what are some websites? What are some places that, because I know they're ready. They're sitting there. They're ready to write. So where are some places they could go, sites, things like that, that they would want to go to?
On this issue?
Well,
you can go to Online Sunshine, which is the Florida legislature's website. Just Google it. I don't remember website addresses anymore. I just Google. And that will give you a list of every legislator and their email address, and you can call their staff. It's real important to build a relationship with their staff. You can reach out to the committees that will be looking at the funding issues this session. Just participate. Go to the Centers for Disease Control and the National Institutes for Health, and go to some of the medical websites that you trust and read about addiction, read about how that happens and the scientific information behind it, so that you're more well versed on the fact that it's a crisis or it's a disease. Go to, there's just so many different places you can go to, but just show up.
Yeah.
Just show up.
Well, and if anything, I think they can go to your website and they can probably see as far as future meetings, things, events that are going to be going on. Your thoughts and, positive things. We've talked a lot about a lot of positive things and things that are working. What are some of your thoughts that you see for the future for our listeners and what's going on out there? So, what do you kind of see? What are your thoughts for the future? What do you see?
I see this issue has gained more momentum in the last year than it has in the, 10 years, 13 years prior. In 2004, the summer that I moved to Palm Beach County, I lost two friends to prescription drug overdoses, and that was 2004. That was basically swept under the rug. Nobody wanted to talk about it, and here we are today, talking about it on a radio show. It's come leaps and bounds, and I think it just will continue to gain more traction as people are more comfortable, talking about it, and it doesn't seem like such a taboo topic anymore. And so I'm encouraged by the conversation, but boy, we have a long way to go in making sure we help people.
Yeah, I think the thing that I know this is what I gained from last night was seeing so many people in recovery, the courage and what they do and the bonding that goes on. I mean, the hugs and the kisses, the tears. I mean, it was really to see so many people together and realize that they're not alone, that there is somebody there. And to see the others that were there along with you speaking was just, it was so moving to see. So, finally, some thoughts for the week. We're getting ready to wrap up here. What are some thoughts, some things that people might want to carry into for the week? So,
I think the message that I gave to the drug court participants earlier this week, there's a community out there. We're here for you. Reach out to us. If you need help, if you have an idea, if you want to actively participate in the fight, if you want to, testify in a, political committee, in the legislature or the county commission. But I've been doing advocacy training for 22 years. I'm happy to help, anyone hold their hand and teach them how to do this. My phone number at my office is 561-355-2206. It's 355-2206. Call me if you want to engage in this conversation, and I'll help point you in the right direction. But just remember that, you or your loved one, you're suffering from a disease. There's nothing morally wrong with you. We're here to help. It's a medical condition, and I'm here to support you any way I can.
With that, thank you so much for being guests on our show, Vice Mayor Melissa McKinley. Really enjoyed having you. Thanks again for being a part of our show.
Thanks for having me, Peter.
Okay. Have a great week. Thanks again.
This
has been the Family Center for Recovery radio show. To learn more about the center or to send a link of the show, visit FCFRMD.com. That's FCFRMD.com. Join us next Sunday at noon for the Family Center for Recovery show.
Hi, this is Amy Key with FlipCheapHouses.com. Our company specializes in teaching beginners how to invest in real estate with little to no financial risk. Are you determined to succeed and have at least $10,000 for startup fees and want to work one-on-one with a professional real estate investor for 12 months? Are you motivated and have at least $10,000 for startup fees and want to start a business now? With our help, in as little as 2 weeks, you can start putting deals together flipping cheap houses. Are you ambitious and have at least $10,000 for startup fees and want to get a side business started for additional income? If you can give us 10 hours a week, we can show you how to flip cheap houses. If you are a beginner and want to learn how to flip cheap houses, then help me help you. Go to our website at help2017.com and watch our free webinar. That's HELP2017.com to watch our free webinar. HELP2017.com.
Premature birth is the number one killer of babies, but you can do something today. Help the March of Dimes provide education and support to families and fund life-saving research to give every baby a fighting chance. Give them tomorrow at marchofdimes.org/tomorrow.
The news, that's now. On air or online, 24-7. News Radio 1290 WJNO. West Palm Beach. Life in the here. News in the now. News Radio 1290 WJNO. West Palm Beach.